We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wyxr.org.
That you alluded to, being in community is a huge way to, you know, grow up creatively and get past that imposter syndrome, because what you will find is that everybody feels like this. And yet, you're accomplishing things, and once you start to accomplish things, your confidence will naturally build because you're building a track record.
It's a beast that shows up every day. I'm just going to be honest. It shows up every single day. Season one of Black is America, I'm making the episode for Guy on Blueford about the first Black astronaut, and I'm listening to, like, man, this is garbage. This isn't good. Whatever. But I have to remind myself that, like, I'm also, when I'm, you know, writing and editing and stuff like that, I'm hearing all those single pieces singularly. They haven't come together yet. So sometimes it's just trusting the process, right? You know, and that, like, it's like you've done this before. You got evidence. It's going to work out. Just trust the process. Keep moving forward. And again, I will highlight community, right? When you're down in the dumps and you're like, man, I don't know. And then you have those cheerleaders. Oh, come on, man. You're the blah, 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 the blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then you have the people. Oh, you mean the same person who did X, Y, Z? That's the person that's having imposter syndrome today? Oh, okay, sure. Woe is me. But I say all that to say that, like, the community is so important to make sure that not only to keep you, you know, hyped up and that you're going in the right place, but also to keep you grounded. Because me and my therapist talk about my ego often, right? So it's one of those things where the community is essential.
And I'll just wrap up this panel saying, I think about, is it the work you're doing, is it purpose or is it pride? Because then the source of those feelings might be pointing you in a different direction. But if the work you're doing is about purpose, then sometimes that insecurity we feel, we're supposed to feel that way. Because if we're too confident in the work we're doing, then sometimes I think, is this actually simply ego? And so that's also something that I think about. Well, we are actually over time, but let's thank our panelists, Chastity J, Dominic Lawson, and Lita McCullough-Seletsky. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Let's Grab Coffee. This is WYXR 91.7 FM. And don't forget to subscribe to Let's Grab Coffee in podcast format and on YouTube so you never miss a conversation. And then you can also re-listen, because there's always so many good gems that I know you have to go back to. I know that I do. I re-listen to these shows all the time. Thanks so much again for joining me. And I can't wait for us to spend some more time together next week.
What's up, Memphis? This is Serena Wages, and you're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, the station with the city's soul.
This is the Daily Memphian Midday News Brief. Despite a prior statement suggesting otherwise, a prosecutor with the Shelby County District Attorney's Office did not strongly oppose lowering the bond for a now-deceased suspect involved in a recent shootout with Memphis police officers. Aaron Fleming says audio of the hearing reveals that an assistant district attorney told Judicial Commissioner Chris Ingram there was no need to reduce Jalen Lobley's bail. But also, he said that if Ingram lowered it, he wouldn't be upset.
At the hearing's conclusion, Ingram did indeed lower the bail. He released Lobley on his own recognizance, meaning zero bail, with curfew conditions. The ADA told Ingram he believed Lobley's initial bail was too low given what he was charged with. The prosecutor also told the judicial commissioner that Lobley didn't have a prior record and he didn't appear to be a flight risk. For the Daily Memphian, I'm Aaron Fleming.
The Tennessee Department of Transportation began gathering public input on Thursday about a proposed replacement bridge across the Mississippi River at Memphis. Bill Dree says the open house gathering at Central Station drew several dozen people who circulated around enlarged maps of the proposed bridge that would replace the 75-year-old Memphis-Arkansas Bridge.
Some estimates have put the all-in cost of a new bridge at $1 billion. The state is applying for federal funding for the project as well, and the Arkansas Department of Transportation is also involved. The initial plans call for specific design and then construction to begin in 2026. That's if federal grant funds are approved in the current round. For the Daily Memphian, I'm Bill Dries.
More on these stories and others are available at dailymemphian.com.
Daughter being born, being in that room when my wife was giving birth, it changed my whole outlook on how I see a woman.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
There will still be the journey.
The journey.
New sheriff in town, and his name is
the journey.
Journey.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is
the journey.
The journey.
What is it that moved you?
The journey. The journey. The journey. The journey. The journey.
Welcome back to another episode of The Journey. I'm your host, Larry Robinson, and today we have a Memphis icon that he's a silent guy. He moves behind the scenes. And the reason I got this quote that I'm going to share with you today is because I think he is the personification of just that. And it comes from the great civil rights activist Martin Luther King. And it goes like this: lightning makes no sound until it strikes. He moves in silence. You know how they say bad boys move in silence? This is a good boy that moves in silence. I'm talking about Vince McCaskill, father, husband, a tremendous community leader. He's also a pastor of By God Inspired Fellowship Church in South Haven, Mississippi. He is the president and CEO of School Seed. So if you're a young person and you're looking at this, this man has affected your life for the positive, and I'm about to introduce him. So without further ado, we have Brother Vince McCaskill.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Oh,
thank
wonderful you. Introduction. I don't know who wrote that. Thank you.
Well, though. Listen, we're going to start back. We're going to start way back. New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you remember about, you know, your early years in New Orleans.
Wow. Being born in Charity Hospital. Obviously, I don't remember that at a particular moment.
I was about to say, wow.
But the culture, family.
Family.
My grandmother, my grandmothers, okay. My mom.
Who was in the house with you?
In the house, as I remembered initially, my mom and dad, they got divorced when I was real young,
okay.
About 3 years old. But then we went to reside with my mom's mother. We called her Sugar Baby.
Okay.
And so I remember my mom, my grandmother, my Uncle Barry, my Aunt Lori, and my Aunt Rhonda. We were all in that house, man.
Okay.
One big family. It was, those are the formative years, and those years shaped my whole understanding of family and love.
Okay. Well, who outside of that family unit, that early family unit, had the biggest impact on young Vincent?
Outside of that family unit, probably my Uncle Bruce, who had went off and he started playing in the NBA.
Right.
But he was the hardest. When I was a young kid, I couldn't stand Uncle
really?
Bruce.
Really? Why? Right? Now, why? What made Uncle Bruce so?
He was just the epitome of a dude. Like,
okay,
you're going to do this, you're going to do that. I mean, so accountability and discipline and so forth. And there was no, you know, he was very, very serious. But he became one of my favorites as I became older.
Okay.
I said, thank you, Uncle Bruce, for all of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What decision did you make as a young person that ended up having a lifelong impact, even though at the time you may not have known what you were actually making a decision about?
So it was, mother passed away in 1983.
Okay.
My Uncle Bruce wanted to take responsibility for me.
Mm-hmm.
He had to go play overseas that year. So he, his wife, and my youngest cousin, his son, moved to Italy while myself and his daughter moved to Lake Charles, Louisiana. So I was there for that year.
Okay.
I reconnected with my father.
Okay.
In that time, and made a decision that I wanted to live with my father.
Okay.
And, you know, there was some back and forth, mm-hmm. But that decision was the best decision I could have ever made. My uncle would have taken very good care of me.
Right.
But I needed to be with my father.
Why was it so important that you look back and think, you know, man, that was the decision?
Had I not lived with my father, I probably would not have lived in the South.
Mm.
I would not have lived in the South. My uncle at the time was in Seattle, Washington.
Right.
I would have probably stayed on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest.
Right.
Eventually, when he got out of the league, he ended up going to the East Coast. He went through New Orleans, but ended up in Boston, where my aunt-in-law became the controller of Harvard Medical School.
Okay.
So I probably would have been between the West Coast, maybe a little stint in the South, but back on the East Coast.
Okay.
That decision to really want to be with my father, didn't know it was a major move.
Right.
But it stabilized me. Really? In many, many different ways.
Okay.
And it put me on a trajectory that I'm on now.
Okay. Okay. As a young person, who did you dream you would be? And how different are you from that person?
So as a young person, you're going to laugh at this. I thought I wanted to be Superman.
Yeah.
Superman put on that cape and he'll be one of these numbers.
Right,
I'm sorry,
right,
about the mic, you know. And I was like, man, that's so cool. That's so I see myself going into the phone booth and coming to say, they don't know what the phone booth is.
Right,
now,
right, right.
And coming out with the big S on my. So I know it's funny because at the time, Superman and MLK, right?
Right.
Those two were the people that I looked up to.
Right.
Even the Malcolm X's at that time, you know,
right.
It was like, you know, just wanting to make an impact, because when you think about those, even though Superman is a fictitious character and right. MLK is very real and Malcolm
right.
X is real.
Right.
The one thing that the individuals had in common was impact to communities, to society.
Right.
Did not know exactly what I was going to become
right.
because when you're, a little kid, you're just trying to play with your toys.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Just trying to enjoy my childhood. It wasn't until I was back in New Orleans in 1985 living with my father. He
right.
decided to put me into a preparatory school called St. Augustine High School.
Okay.
Anybody know anything about New Orleans? The Purple Knights, March
right.
of 100.
You went to St. Aug?
I went to St. Aug, man.
Oh, man. We got to talk offline on St. Aug. But listen, I got a couple more questions,
yes.
but this one is one I'm really interested mm-hmm. in. When did you know you were going to be okay? When could you look in the mirror and say, I got this thing called life?
39 years old.
39?
Yeah. That's when I had my awakening and my very real interaction with the Holy Spirit.
Mm.
God, the Father.
Right. Okay. We're going to unpack that in the second half.
That was, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
What's your why? Why you get up every day and fight the good fight?
Because my life has purpose and meaning, and there are people who are being presented to me that I am put in place to make a difference. Don't know what that looks like. Could be a mustard seed. That's why I get up.
Okay. Last question of this segment. When did Vince McCaskill know that he was a black man? Hold on. Listen, we're going to be right back on the journey when Brother Vince is going to share with us when he realized he was a black man. So stay right there. This is The Journey on the Kadzukian Network. Be right back.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
Success in life is not a straight line. There are twists and turns in everyone's life, and the more you know about their story, the more you'll understand the process. Kadzukian Media Group proudly presents The Journey, a show that features successful black men in Memphis telling their stories of their lives and the ups and downs they've encountered on their ultimate road to success. We believe The Journey will encourage young men and help them see that life is a journey. Watch The Journey, hosted by me, Larry Robinson. Brought to you by the Kadzukian Media Group in partnership with the Delta Boulay. Welcome back to The Journey. I'm your host, Larry Robinson, and we have Mr. Vince McCaskill with us today. And before we left, Mr. McCaskill was going to share with us when he realized he was a black man. But before we go there, he said he wanted to be Superman as a young man. So I got to ask the brother, what's your superpower?
Oh, wow. My superpower is actually being able to read the mind of people.
What?
Yeah. Discernment.
Discernment.
That's what it is. That's all. That's
break
all it
that,
is.
Break that down for the listeners.
Well, you know, the good book tells us you'll know a tree by its fruit. But before you can even know what that tree is, you got to know who you are and you got to know what your issues are. Once you've identified those and made good with those, then you can look at other people and you can see what their issues are.
Awesome. Awesome. So you are getting your lifetime gift, your lifetime flowers. Every superhero has theme music. What's playing when you walk out to get your lifetime flowers?
I had a tiger, man. Oh, I was a huge Rocky dude back in the day, right?
Oh,
and
yeah?
When Mr. T, you know, the Eye of the Tiger. I threw that. That was quick. Yeah. Eye of the Tiger. Dun, 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 dun.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. All right. So we're going to go back to the question.
Mm-hmm.
What was the moment in your life that you realized you were a black man?
After my mother passed away, we were in San Francisco, moved back down to Lake Charles, Louisiana, back in 1984.
Okay.
That was the moment I knew I was
black. Well, tell us, unpack it, you know, share with us.
It was just a mindset. It was like a cloud. The things that I could do and say, people I could look at when I moved back down south, you can't look at that person, or you gotta keep your head down, or what?
Really?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was just, all I could say was it was a wall. You felt like you actually hit a wall.
Right.
And I knew in that moment, I was in a very different place, and that place saw me differently from what I was looked at in California.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you love about California?
Exposure.
Okay.
California has its issues, you know.
Right.
But the exposures to different cultures, okay. Understanding the opportunities. I'm a poor kid in California. We didn't have any money.
Right.
Mom was on SSI, but my mom was a worker.
Okay.
Being exposed to Little League baseball and soccer and right. All of this other stuff in the poor communities of California.
So we say the thing, we say, if they can see it, they can be it.
That's correct.
Is that what I hear you saying? Is that the diversity of being able to be in an environment where you had a lot of different experiences allowed you to see something else and know something else?
That's right. I mean, if you cannot see it, how can you even begin to think about it?
Right.
Does it even exist? I mean, even in the marketing strategy, we talk about marketing, you know, people say put your business out there because if you don't tell people about your services, you don't exist.
Right.
So people have to see things. And part of keeping people in bondage is not letting them know that there's more than what they see in their environment.
Okay.
And creating the conditions that keep people in that environment.
Right.
If I had stayed in New Orleans, it might be a different story for me now.
Right.
But my mom knew she had to get away from her circle of friends.
Okay.
And move out to the West Coast.
Okay.
Game changer for my life.
Game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What has Memphis given you, Vince? What has Memphis fed into Vince McCaskill and his family?
Culture, called deep sense of culture, particularly African-American culture. The history of migration from the Deep South through Memphis and understanding the role that Memphis played in some of the individuals who lived in Mississippi, how they took their families and they migrated up to the North.
Okay.
Memphis, you know, has taught me a lot about who I am as a person.
Okay.
And who people are.
Okay.
Not everybody's your friend.
Right.
There, you know, there's different cliques, obviously, and in any city in America, there are cliques. You just have to know who you are. And what Memphis gave me was the ability to find who Vince McCaskill is.
Right. Who are some of those people that helped you navigate the path of learning who Vince McCaskill is and was?
Oh, I got to say my wife, Rhonda McCaskill. Love her so much. We've been married for 30 years.
30 years.
30 years. I will say my daughter.
Okay.
All right.
Now, how does your daughter, I got to ask you, mm-hmm. How does your daughter have that kind of impact on you?
Because when she was born, I knew that I wanted to be the kind of father that didn't miss anything. I didn't want to have any regrets. I didn't want to miss those moments trying to chase money.
Okay.
And so I was there, and that grounded me, that stabilized me.
Okay.
That's in my family circle. Outside of the circle, I got to give a shout out to my pastor, Bartholomew Orr.
Okay.
He ordained me too. And so Pastor Orr and some of the other, William Mitchell, he's a broker here in Memphis for Crylike, and
right.
A few other people helped me to really grow into the man. I call it authentic manhood.
Right. They always talk about your five closest friends. Show me your five closest friends and I can tell you who you are.
Well, I don't have five closest friends. Okay. Well, we do have five closest friends. So, yeah, because our circle is small, man.
Okay.
So I can.
Now, why do you keep your circle small?
You can't trust everybody. Everybody's not there for the right reasons. That you want people who have been with you and seen you at your worst and did not condemn you.
Right.
Only inspired you to be the best that you can be. Five good friends. I got to give a shout out to Ron and Velva Blake and Bartlett. Oh my goodness. I'm going to get in trouble for this, right? When they look at
you, you don't have name everybody. No,
okay.
Yeah, you don't have name everybody. Just those that you just come to mind.
DJ Morton, Daryl Morton out of Indianapolis, and Robert Lowe out of Orlando, have been brothers who ride or die with me, since day one. Since I found out who I am, you know, right. As a man, right?
Right.
And, you know, there's some other folks, but those are the folks who come to mind in terms of a couple. It would be Ron and Velva Blake, because they've been in our circle for over 20 years. We right. attended church together, and we have a lot of great memories.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to you 39, that moment
mm-hmm.
when you found God.
Mm-hmm.
What was that moment like? And what happened?
Well, for me, you know, I always knew God was real. I got baptized at 12 years old
right.
and so forth, but didn't really have a relationship. I knew that I didn't want to hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to cause any pain to anybody. I wanted to do what is right. That's basically what is ingrained in my DNA. But it wasn't until I was 39 that I really had an encounter with God. And I always equated to the Saul Damascus Road experience. And I won't go into a long story, but I'll just say God is real. He showed me everything about my life that I forgot about,
right.
even those things that we're not happy about. Brought about a gut-wrenching, profound sorrow in that moment, in that room, in my house. Then he showed my life again. And he said, these are the things that could have happened if I did not block those things. So the tears of sorrow turned to tears of joy, and my life was forever changed in that moment. At that moment, I had to tell it, and I was set free.
Okay. Awesome. So you transition to adulthood, in a sense. How has that impacted the work that you do?
You see clear. So from that moment at 39, obviously I had a career in journalism. You know, I worked in the fields and as an anchor reporter over the years, but not really knowing who I'm supposed to be, who I am.
Right.
Trying to find that person. When I hit 39 and that moment happened, I knew what my purpose would be, and went on that journey of maturity. And it also allowed me to make wise business decisions.
Right.
Wise financial decisions, wise relationship decisions, wise parenthood decisions.
Right.
That moment literally is why I'm sitting here today.
Okay. Regrets, mulligans, things that you'd like a do-over on.
Well, I'd like a do-over on, you know, being in high school and looking as good as I did and being so insecure. If I could take the security that I got now in my head and place it into that 16-year-old, oh, I'd be crazy.
You'd be killer. Huh?
I'd be killer. That's the only regret. The only regret is I wish I knew then what I know now. But as Maya Angelou said, don't worry about what you did not know. Be thankful for what you do know right now.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes.
That's powerful. Powerful. All right. You're back in Lake Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's outside. Friends outside. But this day, this Saturday morning, you're sitting there. You're sitting there eating a bowl of cereal, watching TV. You look up, the door opens. It's Vince McCaskill of today. What would Vince McCaskill of today tell that little boy who was sitting there eating that bowl of cereal?
Vince, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Stay the course. Be willing to learn. Be willing to be corrected. Don't take everything personal. Be secure in who God created you to be. Mm-hmm. And it will be okay.
That's pretty powerful. That's pretty powerful. Fondest memories.
Oh, wow, man. So many. Fondest memories. My
and
daughter.
You can break it however you want. Just give me a couple of them.
Daughter being born, being in that room when my wife was giving birth, it changed my whole outlook on how I see a woman.
Really?
Oh, yes. Man, they're strong, vibrant women, man. They can sit through that. And I said in that moment, thank you, God, for making me a man. Watch that. Oh, mad respect for my wife. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Then probably, you know, oh, my goodness, there's so many. Ninth grade at St. Augustine High School, when they started asking us what clubs we wanted to be in. And I was drawn to radio and TV.
Okay.
And I joined the radio TV club, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
And they taught us how to tie a tie. We had to come to school every day with our slacks, with our dress shirt, and you had to be tied down. And those men who were teachers and coaches, they brought the paddle, man. Right. They didn't play.
Oh, no.
Were some of my fondest memories in education.
Okay.
That literally helped me in the trajectory that I'm on now.
So we got to give a shout out to Austin Taylor, who's the headmaster, head guy at the Purple Knights of St. Augustine.
Marching 100.
Oh, yes, yeah. Sir. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's good stuff. So young boys, young men, young ladies, and others are watching you right now. I would like you to leave them with a Pastor Vince McCaskillism. And I want you to say it right there in that camera.
Mm-hmm. You're a young person right now. You're trying to find your way. And here I am at 52 years old talking to you. What could I possibly say to you and even relate to what you have to experience? There's not a whole lot I can say to you to relate. I didn't have the sort of pressures that you have now, but I did have pressure. Here's what I want you to fundamentally know. There is a God. He loves you. There is a Savior. His name is Jesus Christ. I hope this doesn't get cut out. And whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Everlasting life begins the moment you begin to realize that you were put here for a reason, and that there is an enemy who's trying to suppress the gifts that are in you by making you doubt who you've been created to be, trying to make you insecure in every aspect of your life so you cannot soar. So I'm here to tell you today, you are somebody. Trust the process in your life. Become secure in who you are and confident in what you have the ability to naturally do. And it's going to work out. Be opening to learning from others, older people as well. They may not have experienced exactly what you're experiencing today with social media and all of these sort of relationships. We might not even know the lingo that you use now, but we've lived a little bit. We're not perfect, neither are you. But we have overcome some things, and we don't want you to have to go through the same things we went through. We want to hand a baton to you in a better place. We want you to be better. So be open to listening and getting good, sound direction from someone who you see is doing it in a positive way.
You're a financial change agent. I'd like you to also give them a word about finances and how you approach finances, because I think that is something unique that you have that as a part of your ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to leave that as well.
You know, society is telling you it's all about the money. Now, we know money answers some things. It gives you access to certain things. But here's what I don't want you to do. I don't want you to get caught up in chasing the money. I want you to chase knowledge. What happens when you get money? How do you use the money you have? See, a lot of times you have a lot of people who are talking to you about getting that money, but they always run out of the money where they got to get it again. But what if I told you there's a way to get the money, but then make the money work for you? In other words, you take every dollar that you have and figure out a way to use it so that it makes money for you so you don't have to work all the time. See, that's a process and there's a way to do it. So when you hear a lot of people talking about, let's go get the money. Well, if you get that first dollar or that first $100, now the question is, how are you going to use it?
Wow.
And that's what we try to teach. How do you use it? Save, invest, looking at it that way. Don't go into debt. You know, all of these sort of things. But people have to understand the basics first.
I love that ministry that you have. Listen, as it said, man, lightning makes no sound until it strikes. You didn't know this brother was as powerful as he is, but he is. And so I wanted to bring him to you because his message, his ministry is what we need you guys to hold on to. Hold it tight, the words that have been shared, because these are the things that's going to help you change your situation, enhance your situation, or if nothing else, find your purpose in life. I'm Larry Robinson. For my guest, Brother Vincent McCaskill, change agent.
Thank you.
Memphis icon. We're going to keep bringing them to you. I just need you to keep coming back. Once again, The Journey on the Kadzookian Network. Take care.
Support for WYXR, including our 2024 stereo sessions, comes from VIA Productions. Founded in 2003, VIA specializes in audience engagement, creating all types of video and audio content ranging from animation to documentaries. More information on how VIA can bring your brand story to life at viaproductions.co.
Thanks for tuning in to WYXR 91.7 FM. Chris Rowling here, host of Dippin' Your Hip on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. As a listener-supported station, WYXR thrives on your support, not just as listeners, but as active contributors. So, I'm asking you to become a sustaining member today. Head on over to WYXR.org/donate and hit that donate button to keep your favorite WYXR DJs and hosts on the airwaves. Plus, our monthly donors get their own WYXR merch, and a ton of other perks. Our way of saying thanks. Visit WYXR.org/donate today, become a monthly donor, and let's help keep the station with the city's soul going strong.
To get in a game, you have to have a ticket to get into the game. And to him, what he called a ticket was your education or skill. You need some type of either skill trade or you need something to get in the game.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
There will still be
the journey.
The journey.
New sheriff in town, and his name is
the journey.
Journey.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is
the journey.
The journey.
What is it that moved you?
The journey.
Welcome back to another episode of The Journey. I'm your host, Larry Robinson, and today we have an icon that I'm sure you're going to love. But before we get to him, we have a quote. The quote is by the great Maya Angelou, and it goes a little something like this. The future is not simply given to us, but created by us. What does that mean? Nothing's given to us. We have to go out and make it happen. And as black men, most of the time, that's the situation we're in, is that we're always making it happen. I use that quote because this gentleman, Andre Gist, is unique. He's a veteran at buying manufacturing businesses and selling manufacturing businesses. And he's a girl dad. He's a committed father, committed contributor to the city and the Mid-South region. He's also a member of them Purple and Gold Boys, Omega Psi Phi. Husband, and beyond all of that, I think he's a phenomenal entrepreneur and a phenomenal man. So without further ado, Brother Andre Gist.
Hey.
Thank you, sir.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You for coming on here. In and checking us,
yeah,
checking
yeah.
us out.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the early years. Let's go back.
How far back you want to go?
Early, like 2-3 years old at the house. You got your mom, your dad. What it look like?
Okay. So I have one brother, older brother.
Okay.
And grew up in Flint, Michigan.
Okay.
Which was also called Buick City.
Yeah.
Every Buick.
Wait a minute.
Was made in Flint, Michigan.
That's the 810.
Absolutely. It definitely is the 810. Absolutely.
Flint.
Yes,
Flint.
Sir.
Now,
yeah.
Now Flint has some issues with water and things like that.
Yes.
How do you feel about that being a native of Flint?
I hate it because a lot of people only know about the things, bad things that have happened in Flint. Otherwise, they wouldn't know about Flint.
And okay.
So back when General Motors left and abandoned all the plants there, we had over 30 plants there at one point. So this was just the last of the big thing that, you know, another kick in the face, you know, to Flint, Michigan. It was very disappointing because it didn't have to happen, and it happened to Flint like other black primarily cities in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and maybe throughout the country,
right.
But which meant the city, the state had to take it over. We were in bankruptcy.
Right.
Started running water out of. Wow.
Well, hold on. We're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to Flint. I want
to
hear more about Andre. So Andre was at the crib. You had an older brother, mother, father. What'd your parents do?
So my mother, she stayed home. She worked at the hospital for a while, but my dad worked in Buick City for 38 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and just the four of us there, went to public school.
Okay.
My elementary school was right down the street, so I walked to school every day.
Right.
And my junior high school was 4 blocks up the other way, so right. I walked to school every day.
So where did this love for technology and engineering and all of that manufacturing, where'd they come from?
I guess it was all about cars at the time, you know, being a Buick City, car city and everything. And we used to I used to make model cars.
Right.
So it was a big thing back then, you know.
Right.
Buy the box and all the pieces and put it together and paint it, you know. And then I went from there to buying these other little cars, and we learned how to. I used to do rockets.
Okay.
You know, we'd buy the little engines, and send them off.
So you've always been an engineer.
Yeah. So I combined the rockets with the cars, and then I had a little. We had a little team of guys, and we used to do that. So we were taking cars apart and putting engine in them, mm-hmm. and set up the electric, and set them off down the street.
Okay.
You know.
Wow.
So that started back then in elementary school.
Okay. Who outside of your parents had the biggest impact on a young Andre?
Let's see. Other than my dad, probably local pastor.
Okay.
A couple of my uncles, and coaches,
Okay.
Yeah. I started trying to play basketball, So.
Okay. Give me a shout out. Tell me a brother who you want to give some love to.
Oh, okay. Well, we had a lot of stars come out of Flint, One of the latest would be Glenn Rice,
But they ain't had no impact on your life.
Oh, no. Well, back in the day, the ones I used to look up to would be Dr. J, those.
Dr. J wasn't out of Flint, was he?
No, he wasn't out of Flint, but Trent Tucker, he was a couple years older than me. So I went to the same schools. He went to Flint Northwestern, and then he went on to Minnesota, and he was played with
Jordan. So basketball had a big impact?
Yeah, at the beginning, before I moved by, my sport really is in track and field. So,
really?
Yeah. I got cut. And I said, all right, I got to do something else.
Okay.
Everybody wanted to play basketball, but it was just too much competition. So
What was your?
So I was 800.
800?
800 in the 400 relays.
Tried to run the hurdles, but the 800 was my thing. I won state. I mean, I won city.
Okay. You won
I
city.
Made it. I was all state, but I didn't win state. My best friend actually won it.
Okay.
But, so I did well.
Okay. At what point in your life, Andre, did you know you could look in the mirror and say, I'm going to be all right. I can do this thing called life.
Well, that's a good question. It was probably once a couple years out of college, actually. Once I came back, I ended up going working for General Motors. It was called Buick Oldsmobile Cadillac at the time. In the engineering department for bumpers and bumper systems, front end and bumper systems as well. I said, okay. And once you, because I watch people, I'm not a big talker, but you know, just watching people, and I'm very competitive. Right. And then I would look at where I would like to be, and I'd see this guy, and I'd check him out for a while, and says, well, if he can do it, I can do it.
Okay.
You know, I just need to know what it takes to get there.
Okay. Quick question, I'm gonna take you back, and I know that most young brothers know, and especially when the dad is at home. What was that time like when you realized that your dad wasn't a joke?
Oh, I knew. my dad was old school.
Yeah,
you know, he is in the army, so he was very strict about rules and getting up in the morning. He doesn't like what he called laying up. You know, up at 7 o'clock, make the bed. You know, put everything away.
This even was, as a kid, you had to get up.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
Saturday morning.
Absolutely. Yeah, if I wanted, because I like watch my cartoons.
Right.
You got your rules, you know, and whatever the chores, you know, putting trash out, whatever, cut grass, all that good stuff. You know, so that was it every day.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So he didn't play, Yeah, and he was a big guy too.
Oh, he was.
So
he big
was
dude.
Just intimidating. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
All right, Dre. So listen, we last question of the segment. Most brothers I know have an experience where they realize they're a black man. Sometimes it's a young dude. Sometimes it's much older. For you, when was that moment that you realized that you were a black man? Hold on for a quick second. Listen, we're gonna be right back on the journey where Brother Gist is gonna share with us when he realized that he was a brother. So stay right there. This is The Journey on the Kazukian Network. We'll be right back.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
Success in life is not a straight line. There are twists and turns in everyone's life, and the more you know about their story, the more you'll understand the process. Kazukian Media Group proudly presents The Journey, a show that features successful black men in Memphis telling their stories of their lives and the ups and downs they've encountered on their ultimate road to success. We believe The Journey will encourage young men and help them see that life is a journey. Watch The Journey, hosted by me, Larry Robinson. Brought to you by the Kazukian Media Group in partnership with the Delta Boule. Welcome back. So before we left, we had Brother Andre Gist going to share with us when he realized he was a brother. But before he does that, I got another question. Andre, what's your superpower? What's that superpower that you have that you can do better than anybody else?
Well, my wife wouldn't agree. But I think I have some really good jokes.
Okay.
I don't have any to tell, but I think she doesn't think I'm funny, but I think I'm funny. So,
well, now that would be, you would have to be, you know, like a, you know, comedian level.
Well, I'm not at that one.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Life of the party?
Well, depends on who's in the party. people who get my type of humor, so.
Okay, wait.
So
wait,
it's
let's grab
group.
That one. Let's go to another question.
Okay.
Who are you? If you know, I don't know you at all, and I meet you on an elevator, And I said to you, who are you? How would you describe Andre Gist?
Pretty easygoing. Businessman. Mm-hmm. Like to make money.
Okay.
Like to have a good time, you know. I still enjoy sports, and I still love music. Okay. Going to live sporting events and music events, right. and hanging out with my family. I have three daughters, and we have a really good relationship. So
you must have been hell on the women, bro, back in the day.
That's what to say, because I have no boys. So I did all right.
Okay, tell me about
and
that.
And my wife and I, we have a good time, too.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to take you back. What was that time when you looked across the room and you saw that little girl that just made your heart go pity-pat? Who was she?
That's my wife.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
In Flint, Michigan?
This was in Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, tell us about her.
Well, actually, I was with some friends of mine to meet somebody else. It was a blind date, you know, uh-huh. So we were there to meet. And her and I didn't get off. Did not get along. So she's actually more interested in a friend of mine.
Okay.
So, which that worked out fine. So my wife was up front. Uh-huh. Checking out the band, you know, and I says, "Wow, let's check her out, man. She's nice."
Uh-huh.
And a buddy of mine, which I didn't know, says, "Oh, I know her. I'm gonna go talk to her. I'll introduce you to her."
Okay.
And then so he went over there. He's a real big talker, and I went over there and started talking to her, and you know, here's 30 years later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Three kids. And yeah. Everything, huh?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So we're going back. When did you realize you was a black man?
Well, I tell you, so I was co-oping when I had my last 2 years in college.
Okay.
I co-op with the Westinghouse Electric System in Lima, Ohio. And there were three of us off from Bowling Green, and we would go all the way up to Lima, Ohio to work anyway. And so I went to my supervisor, and I asked her if we could tag along with a local, one of the engineers, you know, kind of, and work with this person, you know, and learn, you know, from this person, and, you know, like a mentee, you know, type, you know. And she came back the next day and she says, "That's a good idea, and we're going to start with George." And I said, "Wow, my idea."
Right.
Nobody had anything else to do with this, but she decided to start this whole process with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of let me know right then.
Right.
Then when so this is semester there, semester back in school, you know, back and forth. It's my turn to come back. The guy I get assigned to didn't want to have anything to do with me at all. So I had to basically chase this guy around the plant because he didn't really want to talk to me.
Wow.
So he'd leave drawings out, roll up the, you know, this was back when there was no internet, no much on a computer, you know, so everything's by hand, you know, so we got these big drawings, you know, and they had to be folded a special way, you know, so you can look at the titles here and all that kind of stuff. And he would give me an assignment to fold drawings all day long. That's it. And he's off to a meeting, you know, doing his thing, which is what I wanted to follow him and see how he operates.
Right.
He would leave me in a room folding drawings. So
how did you navigate that? How did you navigate through that?
What I did is I would try to get that done as fast as possible, and then I would just pound him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at a point, once I realized that he was a jerk, you know, I just continued to follow him around anyway, where he could not deal with me.
Right.
Because I'm upset and he's upset too. So at this point, I don't care if he's upset. I'm going to follow you around anyway, you know, and I got out of it whatever I could, you know. And then eventually I talked into them allowing me to teach a class in CNC machining language, you know, and so there was a need for that. So they allowed me to go ahead and set up to teach a class. I put together my own book, you know, the classwork, paper, everything myself.
Right.
So that was my way to work out of that and just started doing something else. You know?
What did that moment teach you? What did you pull from that moment, or what do you glean from looking back at that moment?
That it's not fair, you know? It was really an eye-opening, because I went to black schools my whole life, you know, elementary, junior high, high school, everything was basically primarily black schools. So not until I go to Bowling Green, which is only 6% black, you know, that I started, you know, getting a taste of the difference, you know. But because I'm very competitive, I always think that I can work out through anything.
Right.
You know? So I just I always try to put towards on sports, you know.
Right.
I'm just going to work harder.
Right.
I'm gonna outdo this, you know, try to figure out what, you know, and just keep pushing, you know.
You mentioned sports, and I noticed that a lot of young men who have that sports background seem to have a level of resilience, perseverance. What does sports bring? What does sports give you as a young man growing up?
Teamwork, you know, a shared goal, you know, and, you know, celebration after, you know, successful. I wasn't as good in track in college as I was in high school, but, you know, it was still a lot of fun. You know, you get to travel, go places you wouldn't normally get to go regularly. Just working with other people who like to exercise and, you know, and other things that come along with being an athlete, you know, the uniformity, you know, all the other little stuff, all of that stuff is fun stuff, you know.
Working with others and teamwork, you know, a lot of young people are watching this. You know, when you talk about all the businesses that you've acquired and also sold, how important is that, being able to work well with others? What would you say if you were sharing with a young person about the need to be able to work in teams?
It's very important, because you won't be successful unless you have the other support around you, you know, and you can't just fire people when things don't quite work out. So you gotta understand how to make people get the best out of them and get them to respect you and show them respect, you know, show them that, you know, that they can do certain things that they're hired to do, you know, and that, you know, you're almost like a coach in a way, you know, as being the owner or boss or whatever. You're kind of like the coach. They got to get understanding what the vision is, you know, where we're trying to go, you know, what the customer wants, you know.
When did you know that you wanted to be the owner, the guy in charge? What moment was that when you had to go ahead and take that risk?
Well, actually, not until I was forced to have to do it, because I was given the opportunity to buy in ownership into a business. So when we started, there were four of us. Mm-hmm. So my boss was the major owner, and he allowed me to come in and buy into the company with the goal to eventually buy him out.
Okay.
So that was always the key, that after, and it was 3 years, we'll let you. It was four of us, so two of the younger guys, he could take us out.
Right.
And 3 years, he says, all right, I'm ready. You know, I mean, he met his word. And, you know, and so, but just being as a supervisor and a manager, you just learn and watch people. And it's like, okay, you know, it's not so bad, you know. And then, if you want it to go a certain way, you know, you have to take control, you know. As long as you're trying to follow someone else's rules, you know, which may not line up with what, you know, you need to be able to have to say, all right, well, I'm going to have to take the lead on this whole thing, because it's not going to go where I want it to go.
Right.
It's not going to go where the customer wants to see and where this needs to be.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Were there decisions in your life where, as a young person, you made a decision, and it ended up having lifelong impact, even though you didn't know that at the time?
Well, so that comes down to actually coming to the South, because we actually wanted to do this deal in Detroit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if it wasn't for the customer saying, we need you to locate in Tennessee, would I've ever come that way?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if it wasn't for the customer saying, we need you to locate in Tennessee, would I've ever come down here? And I actually started looking to just not do this at all. And I started interviewing to go to some other companies in Detroit. And my wife and I talked about it, and so we decided to give it a try. And so this was back on the internet. So we pulled up a map. It says, all right, we have to go to Lexington, Tennessee. Where is the nearest city, bigger city? And we're trying to figure out. So, oh, there's Jackson, Tennessee, you know,
right.
That's bigger, you know, which at the time was like 40,000 people, but
okay.
That's more than 6,000 people, you know. So, you know, and then from there, and then eventually started spending more time here. And says, all right, this is more closer to where I'm used to. You know, you go from Detroit, you know, it's just still smaller towns, you know.
Right.
But, you know, it was a great, you know, it ended up being a very great decision to come down here. Great place to raise my daughters and everything, you know.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Your career. How would you define your career?
Overall, I think it's gone well. It's, you know, we've had some ups and downs, you know, in the business. But overall, I think it's worked out very well. You know, was able to sell most of all the automotive-related businesses.
Right.
And so that worked out well.
So are you still in automotive?
Well, I have a startup company, a partner now, and so we have a lighting product.
Okay.
That we're still trying to get off the ground, BG Innovative Systems. So that's a different story. But yeah, so, and that's really on the large truck side. We're trying to get that on the automotive side right now.
Okay.
So,
okay. But anything you would do differently in your career or going, you know, as far as where you went to school, or is there anything you'd want to mulligan on?
I would have gone and gotten an MBA.
Really,
you know, to get a better education on the accounting side, and maybe on the law side. You know, I mean, I have a CPA, I have a good lawyer, same guys I've had for 20 years.
Right.
But that knowledge, you know, I mean, I have it now, but you know, I would have been stronger at that. You know, would have helped better making some other decisions. You know, or quicker decisions on certain things. You know.
Okay.
But, you know, it worked out. I've got some really good guys.
I'm going to take you back, Dre. I'm going to take you back to Flint. You got up. You was up at 6:30 this morning. It's Saturday morning. You're sitting there. You eating your cereal, watching your cartoons. Dude walks in the door. It's old Dre. What would old Dre say to young Dre? What words of wisdom would you give that young man sitting there eating a bowl of cereal?
I would have said, take your school education a little more seriously.
Okay.
I mean, I was a B student, but I could have worked harder.
Right.
Yeah. I should have pushed a little harder.
Okay.
You know? I mean, I was on honor roll and all that good stuff, but I could have got more A's. You know, I was having fun.
He was having the ball.
Yeah.
All right, this is it, Dre. This is it. Brother Gist, there's many young kids that's going to watch this and going to hear this. I would like you to look into that camera right there, and I would like you to leave them with an Andreism, something that they can take from this moment when they watching this video that they can hold for the rest of their life.
I guess we'd have to go back to the education, you know, because what my my boss, and he's a good friend and my mentor, told me is that to get in a game, you have to have a ticket to get into the game. And to him, what he called a ticket was your education or skill. You need some type of either a skill trade, or you need something to get in the game. Either that's a degree or some skill that is going to get you in the game. Otherwise, you are outside watching everyone else. and you were going to struggle the rest of your life. So,
hey, couldn't say it any better myself. Listen, get you a trade. Get something that keeps you in the game that you can excel. Listen, this has been The Journey. For my guest, Brother Andre Gist, yes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We're going to keep bringing them to you. You keep coming back. Thank you for watching The Journey. I'm your host, Larry Robinson. Till the next time.
Thank you to our partner, the Grand Boulet of Sigma Pi Phi Fraternity, Delta Chapter. To hear more incredible stories,